You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Primary consultant is myself because I have a very good brain and I've said a lot of things.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
I like China. You can win against China if you're smart. So don't tell me about China. I know China. China! I beat the people from China. What the hell is going on?
It's time for State of the States.
I don't know, where to begin.
Last night, Republican Donald Trump won the United States election, sweeping battleground states and taking more than 270 electoral college votes that are required to win. Trump's platform mixes old-fashioned conservatism with newer elements of populism, especially on America's position in the global order. I spoke to Andre Faulso from the Yale Daily News about the type of people who voted for Trump yesterday and students' reactions to the election outcome. What was the voter breakdown? Who voted for Harris and who delivered Trump his win?
So Kamala Harris underperformed in each swing state, and Black and Latino voters were a big part of that, with one out of every three Black voters having voted for Donald Trump, which is unprecedented numbers. Donald Trump also managed to keep many young voters and also Latino voters in these swing states, which ended up being very pivotal. Joe Biden, compared to Kamala Harris, she underperformed in many areas where Joe Biden had a clear majority against Donald Trump in 2020. And even though she did win these states, particularly even Connecticut and California in some areas, she did underperform and win by a narrower margin, which did set a precedent for the outcome of this election in the hours after when these states were called.
How was voter turnout compared to previous years?
There were record high turnout levels, particularly in swing states. Each campaign emphasized the importance of voting, and Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, more specifically Donald Trump, created an emphasis on trying to mobilize low propensity voters, being young white men in southern and rural areas, which could have been proven pivotal, particularly in swing states like Georgia and Pennsylvania. And as we've seen now, he did win those two states. So mobilizing those voters ended up being quite vital in terms of ensuring that he would win those states.
And what were the most pressing issues for voters according to exit polls?
The NBC News exit poll that I looked at said that the economy, America's democracy, and immigration were three of the biggest issues that Americans were concerned about in the lead up to the election, but also following, with obviously now we know Donald Trump's handling of it. So it'll be interesting to see how Donald Trump reacts to this as he comes to grips with his second presidential term, but then also in the coming months and years, how Americans interpret his handling of these three big issues as well. The Republicans have also regained control of the Senate and are also on track to win the House of Representatives, which technically is a home run because they would have the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the presidency, which means that any policies that Donald Trump proposes will inevitably pass the balance of power since it's in his favor. And this could set quite a precedent in terms of the policies and the initiatives that he intends to launch, some of them being quite controversial, particularly in the economic and immigration realm, with his proposed 10% tariffs on all imports, and also the re-implementation of his travel ban on predominantly Muslim countries, which could be quite contentious. He's also proposed to deport up to 20 million immigrants in the United States, and also reverse some of the constitutional rights which do exist for these immigrants, particularly those who are born in the United States, which would inherently overturn the 14th Amendment, which could prove quite pivotal and consequential for millions of people that live in the United States.
How has Donald Trump responded to his win?
Donald Trump announced his victory in the early hours of the morning in Florida in his campaign headquarters. He thanked his supporters and called this one of the most historic re-elections in the history of the United States, which is true, it really is. He said that America had given him a mandate and that he would work to heal the country. He also spoke about the campaign and the assassination attempts against his life, saying that divine intervention from God himself and his expected ascent to a second presidential term were key factors as to why he did not lose his life in those attempts. He also said that heading into a second term, that this would be America's golden age. Now, wider questions have been in terms of where certain right-leaning controversial figures will fit into his second presidential administration, particularly RFK Jr., who was an independent presidential candidate, but then shortly conceded and supported Donald Trump. And then also Elon Musk, who in the recent weeks formed the America PAC, which was a political coalition of the right to ensure Trump's win. But then he also poured $118 million into Trump's campaign to give $1 million to Trump voters who supported First and Second Amendment rights by voting for Trump. So it'll be interesting to see where both these figures react or fit into the campaign. But J.D. Vance was also another particularly happy character in response to the outcome and turnout last night. He was very grateful, but then also on the relevance to where I am here at Yale, he'll be the fourth vice president who has graduated Yale to who has graduated from Yale, which was quite an interesting thing to reflect on, and one thing that Yale has been perfectly aware of in the hours since.
How have world leaders responded to Trump's win?
World leaders have already come out and congratulated Donald Trump, most notably Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Although Russian President Vladimir Putin has not come out and congratulated Donald Trump, with one of the representatives of his office saying that they would not come out and congratulate the United States or President Trump himself because they are aggressors in what Russia perceives to be Russian territory. So it'll be interesting to see in the coming months how Donald Trump handles these crises and whether he enacts some of his promises in terms of the funding cuts to military resources being sent to both Israel and particularly Ukraine. When Trump re-enters the Oval Office in January, it will be vital to see how he takes on these issues, particularly in Gaza and Ukraine. And it's no surprise then in that regard that the relationships that these leaders uphold with America's 45th and now 47th president could be very pivotal in terms of the outcomes that happen in these states, because the United States is a very key actor in this realm. Other actors or world leaders that have come out and congratulated him, Christopher Luxon, Winston Peters have come out and congratulated him. And Winston Peters made a side comment saying that this is what America has called for. And it's very interesting to see how world leaders have accepted and come to terms with the outcome of this election, saying that America has voted for change and that Donald Trump was a part of that.
Have we heard anything from the Harris campaign yet?
It was only about half an hour ago that I found out that Kamala Harris has called Donald Trump to concede and to congratulate him on his victory. And in a couple of hours from now, she will address the nation. So by the time this goes to air, she would have already spoken. She's expected to emphasize the importance of a peaceful transition of power. And she was supposed to address the crowds who had gathered at her alma mater, Howard University. However, she, just after midnight, one of her campaign heads announced that she would not be speaking, which set the precedent for the general vibe of the rest of the evening. And in Democratic camps, both throughout the country, but also ones close to where I am here at Yale, we really did sense the vibe that the outcome of the election was not going to turn in their favour after Harris announced that she would not speak in the early hours of the morning.
And how are students feeling about the election result?
Well, at least within my immediate group, people haven't gone to classes today. People are very tired and very exhausted at focusing on this election and also just the outcome of it as well. Many people are scared, confused, angry and anxious. And there is a somber and somewhat fragile ambiance in the air at Yale at the moment. The watch parties were not too energetic either, with people I spoke to who attended saying that by the latter half of the evening, many people had the feeling that Trump was going to pull through with a win. And subsequently, people started to file out of these venues and just head to bed.
I then spoke to political commentator and former political show host at Radioactive, Tom Unger, who was on the ground in New Jersey, about the reaction from both campaigns and the general public to Trump's win. What was the election day atmosphere like?
Yeah, it'd been really interesting. So I've predominantly been based in blue states, both of which being New York and New Jersey, which traditionally have backed Democratic candidates by significant margins. What we'd been seeing in the days prior was what felt like a Trump victory incoming had been overturned, and it felt like there was a Harris swing on the way, predominantly reliant on what appeared to be underpolling of women and a surge of women voters at the polls. The day itself, I went to several voting booths across the state in both red counties and blue counties. So those are the more localized areas that vote either Democrat or Republican. And there was definitely a mood of enthusiasm and a sense that there may potentially be this big swing of women behind the Democratic candidate. And potentially we were seeing the first woman president. I did notice, of course, they have different laws over here. You don't need to take down signs outside houses. And it's fair to say there were still a significant amount of Trump flags.
And were Trump supporters out celebrating?
Yes. So once the election results came out, I think it's fair to say that the Trump team and the Trump campaign and the Trump campaigners out there felt this as a vindication, I think is the key word. Keeping in mind a lot of the narrative has been that the courts are against them, the institutions against them, the media is against them. And this, I think, to a lot of those people who I met out on the street, out at bars, et cetera, deemed this to be a redemption arc and vindication of who they believe. In all honesty, they believe he won the last three elections. So certainly a joyous mood and fair play to them. Their candidate won fair and square, and time for them to celebrate, albeit the next 4 years to put those promises into action.
And how have Harris supporters responded to Trump's win?
Yeah, so the state that I'm currently in, New Jersey, as we say, is a blue state. A lot of these people are Harris supporters. There's definitely a sense of despair. As I say, the last few days felt like Harris could have potentially turned this round and that there was a surge back towards her. There's a lot of despair because that woman vote that was expected looks like it didn't swing the way it would have. I've talked to some people who said that the lights have gone off in America. I've talked to some people who have said that this is the reason the rest of the world has turned off because of Trump. And I've also talked to people who understand that despite all these things, it's a fair and equal election and Trump was the winner.
What is the mood inside the Harris campaign?
So I think there's an understanding that this was going to be a tight election. Leading up to the vote, Harris was trailing in all the swing states, only by up to 0.5 to 3%. But I think there was an understanding from the Harris camp that this could be a possibility. I don't think the extent was as a bit more severe than they expected. The idea that they lost entirety of the swing states and this is a bit of a landslide for Trump is significant. I think what's interesting for people I talk to is that there's not much blame going towards Kamala Harris herself. It was a tricky situation. She won't be the candidate again, obviously, but this is a wider picture analysis, and the Democrats will need to think about how they reach those Latino voters, those working class voters, those middle income voters that didn't vote for them this election, and how they reshape to be a progressive party in the future. There's already a few people, manoeuvring for the nomination at the next election, and it'll be really interesting to see how those people try and counter Trump, which the Democrats have almost wholeheartedly, other than the 2020 election, failed to counter at an electoral level.
Do you have any insights into how local Democrat campaigns are feeling, those who won their House seats but will now be a minority in power?
Yeah, from what I understand, it's a level of despair. They're stoked that there will still be a relatively credible level of opposition from Democrats towards what is a pretty strong Trump presidency and Senate. The House, as we know, as time of recording, is still being decided. They chucked everything into it, so they really focused on those swing states that didn't come through at a presidential vote level. But there's also just some confusion. When there was such a big topic around women's healthcare and reproductive rights on the ballot, how the vote just didn't seem to swing behind them. For instance, the state I'm in at the moment is a significantly blue state, but went from a 15% margin to the Democrats in 2020 to a 5% now. So that's a significant loss in state coverage. As well as that, if you look at the wider picture, Trump in 2020 received 3 million more votes than he did nationwide in 2024. That suggests turnout was low. That suggests people didn't get out to vote. And those local teams who have won but don't have their preferred candidate in power, I think there's a level of dismay there that despite this really hard campaign, that people just didn't get behind them.
And I spoke to Associate Professor in Law, Scott Optican, from the University of Auckland, about the ramifications of Trump winning as a convicted felon, as well as the potential impacts of a Trump presidency in Aotearoa. What are the implications of the United States electing a convicted felon?
Well, I mean, there's nothing in American law. There's nothing in American law that forbids a convicted felon being elected. So there are certain, I guess, kind of moral and other sorts of policy implications, the way the rest of the world sees that and what it suggests to the rest of the world about America. From Donald Trump's point of view, the basic implication is that all of his criminal cases will effectively go away. The federal criminal cases will be dismissed as soon as his new attorney general comes in, and the state criminal cases will either be dismissed or kind of held in abeyance, indefinitely, to the point where they will probably disappear, you know, altogether. So from his point of view, basically, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
How could a Trump presidency impact New Zealand?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. I mean, probably in the short term, the markets tend to react well to a Republican presidency. The U.S. stock market is up now, but I think there'll be some, you know, volatility in global markets, for example, economically, because I don't know what his policies are going to be. But I think in the long term, probably the implications are, you know, potentially not good for almost any other country in the world, certainly countries that are, you know, kind of liberal democracies and believe in the rule of law. So, for example, you know, he may very well start a trade war with China with his tariff policy, and that could create significant global economic impacts, you know, around the world. He will probably stop giving aid to Ukraine, and that will embolden Russia and possibly other autocratic regimes, you know, around the world. He does not have a great deal of support for NATO, and he's not an environmentalist, and he, you know, doesn't really believe in climate change. So there's a lot of places where New Zealand have economic and policy interests, you know, belief in the kind of global world democratic order, a stable economic policy, you know, making sure the environment is saved, you know, for future generations, not wanting to bolster autocratic regimes around the world. You know, New Zealand has a lot of interest in that, you know, both practically and speaking, and also just kind of as a matter of our own political ideology. And I think Trump is potentially a threat to all that. So the bottom line, you know, I think given his mercurial nature and his sort of relative instability in economic and global and political policy, as that affects America, you know, it will affect the rest of the world, because a stable, you know, America has always been important, you know, for the rest of the globe. And I think we're going to see quite a lot of political and instability and economic instability coming out of policies of the Trump administration, not immediately, but, you know, over the coming years.
Apart from economic policy, could Trump's social policies have global ramifications?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For example, I mean, you know, you've seen a significant retraction of, you know, women's health care rights and women's rights in the United States. I think that could have flow-on effects as to how America supports women's rights and, you know, reproductive freedom in other countries. You know, I think definitely I mentioned the environment. You know, Trump is not a believer in climate change. He's not an environmentalist. And I think, you know, lack of U.S. support for environmental initiatives across the world could have significant, you know, significant impact other than economics. And I also think his penchant for autocratic regimes could really be a problem. I mean, if I'm in Ukraine right now, I'm just terrified as to, you know, the failure of American support for Ukraine in the future and what's going to happen to that country, which is fighting for its life, you know, against, you know, an autocratic regime that invaded it. So, yeah, there's lots of other areas other than economically where I think, you know, we've really got a lot to be concerned about.
And how could U.S. foreign policy under Trump be different now compared to last time he was in power?
Well, I think one thing is the, there a lot of the guardrails are off now, right? I mean, Trump had people around him before who were kind of more traditional Republicans who kind of understood the limits and appropriate use of American power and held him back from his worst impulses. But they won't be there anymore. There are very few guardrails. He can't be reelected again, so he's got nothing to lose. He can only serve two terms as president. So I think you're going to see his foreign policy is going to, again, possibly create trade wars, you know, through tariffs, which will impact the world economy. And that's, he's not going to be held back from doing that. I think you're going to see, again, a move towards, you know, autocracy and autocratic regimes. I mean, he certainly is very sympathetic to Putin and Viktor Orban in Hungary. I think that's going to impact that. He claims he's going to settle Ukraine and the Gaza war and all that, but he's not told us how. I'm very skeptical that any of his policies will help in, you know, in those conflicts. You know, heaven forbid there's another worldwide pandemic that requires a global response. You know, he certainly was a miserable failure in that one in the United States on his watch. You know, we had over 1 million dead people. I mean, we did have the vaccines. I give his administration credit for that. But by all accounts, it was badly mishandled. So, you know, heaven forbid we have another one of those. And I think it's going to have some significant global health implications for the rest of the world. So we're just going to have to see.
That was Andre Faulso from the Yale Daily News, political commentator Tom Unger, and University of Auckland's Professor Scott Optican on Trump winning the 2024 United States election last night.
Excuse me, I'm really rich.
That was State of the States.
Bye-bye.
How stupid is this?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.